Therefore was a single human being created. To teach you that to destroy a single human soul is equivalent to destroying an entire world, and that to sustain a single human soul is equivalent to sustaining an entire world. And a single human being was created to keep peace among human beings, that no one might say to another, "My lineage is greater than yours." Join me now as we celebrate the birthday of Adam on Miracle Nutrition. Tequila. Tarua. Ricola. Canada. Miles Davis. Later, Miles Davis. Hello, friends. I'm blowing the shofar. And now your dog is angry at me. And I don't blame them. Why are you blowing the shofar, Mr. Hardy White, sir? Because today is the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Now let's break that down. Rosh, head. So you know I'm going to talk about heads. Nothing but heads today. Ha. Ha-ha. The. Ha means the. Shana, na-na-na, means year. Well, not shana-na. That doesn't mean year. Oh, bless it. Oh, shout out to shana-na, though. Oh, a friend of mine met Bowser and said he's a very nice gentleman, but he's incapable of posing for a picture without grimacing and flexing his bicep. That's all right. I have that, too. I'm glad I don't have a signature pose. Or maybe I wish I did, so that I wouldn't feel awkward when my picture was made. A lot of people say, "Oh, can I make your picture?" I say, "Oh, go ahead," because now everybody has phones. It used to be strange, angry German babysitters. They used to roam the streets of the city, taking people's pictures without their permission. But now it's everybody. And they take their own pictures without permission. But that's aggressive, isn't it? I went all the city taking pictures of my face. And that's why I look so angry, because stop it. Get that thing out of my face. I'd rather have a Rolleiflex or a Rolodex in my face with those fancy cameras that you look down upon. Don't look down on any kind of camera. They're amazing. I have some that I'm not using now because they're old SLR, which stands for slower. Because you have to take the film to the Eckerds and everything. Oh, it takes forever to process it. Now, you can get your picture before you want it. How many times does that happen? Like, I'm lining up a picture. Shkleek, you touch that camera thing. I don't even want it yet. It used to be I had to wait for days. And now, I'm getting the pictures. Oh, I didn't even take this yet. And now with the time travel, oh, my phone is loaded. It's amazing. Also, I'm getting lots of subpoenas from all over time. So somebody in the 50s wants to see some evidence or something I apparently have. I don't take a lot of pictures. I'm looking back at my old family pictures, deciding which ones to keep. And there's so many just empty couches and everything. I don't know what I was thinking or anybody was thinking when they were just wasting film. So this is, make sure everybody's in that shot. And that's the other problem, too. There's no candids. Everybody lines up. So I'm gonna get everybody together. People that would never, ever really touch one another. Have their arms around one another in these old family photos. And say, "I can't believe Aunt Denny is touching my mother." And why are they not screaming at one another? And that's the thing. And it doesn't give you a real, realistic... I think maybe if there was films of all these old things and I had to watch those, at least the films of my childhood, sometimes my grandfather got a got an 8mm camera, and he drove to Miami, and he just filmed out the window. So it's not just water. I said, why'd you do that? And there's like me, I'll be waving or something somewhere in them, but there's nothing going on. You can't tell that people are living a life or anything. It's really, they're amazing. My grandfather could take home movies in such a way that they conveyed no information. And there are people, artists, have now tried to do that, replicate that style that came naturally to him. It's some people know how to use a camera, and others, they're just baffled by it. They're going, I don't even know what I'm seeing. Isn't that interesting? We all see the world differently, especially those of us who have some kind of interesting filters that makes the things look antique. Isn't that interesting? Say, oh, these floaters don't bother me. They just make everything look like an Instagram filter. It's wet. Look at that. It's been scratched up because no one's cared for this photo. Or it was torn up. You see the weddings that didn't work out and people don't want the photos anymore. I'll take them. Why? I don't really know. I'm going to sell them to surrealists for collages. It's a lot of that's a lot of my business. I'll do that. I'll say, I'll find a bunch of garbage. Anybody, you want to nail it to a board and sell it to a rich person? So, we can't do that so much anymore. I have to go to the 30s to do this. I should specify about that. What's all this nonsense about time travel, Artie? Oh, I mean it figuratively. I just mean that your head is like a Doctor Who TARDIS. In it, you can go anywhere. Oh, that doesn't count. Does it? No, it doesn't count, Artie. Does it not? And I ask you why this. So let's say you go, this is what my old, I'm going to quote a lot of holy men today. And why? Because it's a holy Jewish day. So why not just make it a holy day for everybody? You say, it's the Jewish New Year. It's not my New Year. Every day is the beginning of a new year. Like there's going to be a year until today again. So there you go. And it can signify anything. Well, it's not the way the calendar works. I did not decide the calendar. Someone named Julian did. So don't start with me. Before that, someone named Greg. So it's just anybody can start a calendar, I believe. And I'd like to have one. I'd like to have one of my own. Everything can't be so you-centered. Well, centered on something. My goodness. Why not make it about me? Don't say these things in church or synagogue. These are esoteric. These are mystical things that we can only talk to each other about in private, drunk. So I don't want you to get the impression that I'm going to share with you some very, very secret ideas. And I won't even tell you where they came from because I've been sworn to secrecy by Rabbi Ricky. I call him that. It's not even his name. It's not even close. But I meet privately with a rabbi whose ancestors are from Provence, all right? Actually, they're Provence and Arles, specifically, which is not really Provence. It's kind of, never mind. I don't want to go into this. I've given away too much already. And he's blind. Dang. Stop saying things. His real name's Isaac. I'm really, 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 really messing myself up. I can't keep a secret sometimes. Secrets are for telling. And that's why I just like to say to all the Chinese and Russian listeners, here, the following are sites of U.S. missile silos. No, I'm not going to give away those secrets. They don't tell me that, by the way, other listeners. I'm not privy to any special information about the U.S. I can tell you if you ever want to attack any kind of super good chicken places, I could help you there, but I wouldn't. Why would I do that? I wouldn't do that. I have loyalty to people I know. I have to see them. Perhaps if every day I was going to your place to have vodka or something steamed, then I would care for you. But as it is, it's my neighbors I care for. Bless them. Accidents of birth that we are here are all births an accident. I don't know that it looked like an accident. Oh, what a messy process. I really resent that mammals give live birth. I think an egg is much more dignified, and I think a lot of ladies would agree, say, oh yes, that would have been fine with me. Maybe even chicken egg size. And then just to keep it, let it stay at the hospital or something. I don't know. I don't know another way of, I'm not God. Was that way God designed it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think anything. Well, I didn't come up with all that story, so how am I supposed to know all the backstory? That's like just asking any old nerd about some idiot, some detail of Middle Earth. See, I'm not Tolkien. I mean, I can go back and look and see what Tolkien said, but I can't second guess him. He's gone now. Only Tolkien knows whether there was orc orthodontists or something. Who knows? I don't know how complicated their society was. A lot of it's could have devolved or something like Sleestak's society. There's an example of a society that used to be more sophisticated and has backslid. Now they can't even talk; they just hiss. Does this sound like somebody's? I don't know whether that's an allegory, analogy, metaphor. I get them all mixed up, don't I? So yes, Artie, sometimes you say meta analogy when you mean algorithm. I know. I don't know what I'm saying half the time, but I'll tell you what, though. It's like music. Do we always know what note is going to come out next? Yes, if someone yells, Takiyah Gadol. Here, I'm going to go with the shofar again. Again, the dogs. I'm having, there are now 78 dogs lined up at the back door. That was circular breathing. And now I'm high. No, I didn't circular breathe. I didn't really have a goal when I set out. I should have played a tune. I can play a little tune on. This is a ram's horn. What do you blow? What is a shofar? I don't even know, Artie. I forgot to say. It is the horn of a ram, and it's very difficult to find rams that their horns are actual horns. So I imagine that this was difficult to find. I'm trying to see what it would have looked like on the animal, and I'm a little bit appalled that it's no longer on the animal. I hope the animal is deceased anyway. And there I'm really bit. What I'm doing is I'm sucking on a piece of dead animal. I guess I do that when I go for barbecue. But there's no meat on a ram's horn. I always get this. I get tricked into getting it at the barbecue place because the sauce is so good. Like, oh, I can't actually eat it. But then every Rosh Hashanah, I'm glad I did because I save them. I don't save my chicken bones. I should because I'm in a cult. And I could, I'm not in any group because I forget to pay dues. Boy, they're letting you know, too. I got more Dunning letters. Oh, I should have taken the time and written a joke because I know I could have made some kind of pun with Dunning or you think about it. To dun someone, to try to get collected a debt from them. Right? Do we not say that in this country? I don't know. I'm a spy. And a lot of I've been a spy so long that my info is all dated. That's why I talk this way. Say, oh, he's not. No one speaks that way. I know. I have an old book. When I started playing, I didn't grow up with a father. And that's by choice, his choice. But I grew up with, so my mom always tried to help me out. She tried to be a well, I didn't even try to be a father, but one time I got to playing football at school. I got on the football team, and I didn't know what to do. I wasn't a good athlete. They took anybody. It's a small school, so all right, well, we can't legally prevent you. Thank you. What position will I be? Rarely. So my mom, I didn't ever have a football or didn't know how to catch it or throw it or whatever. She bought me a book. How to play football. As a little boy, I guess she went to the bookstore and between working two jobs or whatever, found time to go get this, a little slim volume. And it had a fella on the front clutching the football, and he had one of those, just those leather cap kind of helmets with his arms straight out like that. And it was from, I guess, the 40s or something. I don't even know. I don't, if he had a face mask, it was like a single. pipe cleaner or something. But and doing that stiff, that classic stiff arm thing. And I said, this is great, thanks. And it helped me, not at all. But it was the gesture that was important to me. I never forgot that, because I said, my mom cared about it. And it, she showed the extra caring by not knowing anything about the subject. Okay, you know what I mean? That was a better gift than one that had been accurate. I just thought, so I want to help you, I just don't know how. Those are the most tender, beautiful gestures, I think, are the ones that are that come from the heart but are just useless. Oh, I don't know. My heart's just extra tender right now. Probably because all that I've been eating at a place that puts a lot of monosodium glutamate in their food, and they insist that they don't. They go, no, we don't. We just use this tenderizing salt. And they go, I know that's what it is. Oh, you're driving me crazy. But, oh, it makes the chicken just melts in your mouth. That's the problem. And then what it also does is it somehow melts the veins in my temple. And I'm up all night with searing headaches. But they also let me know, hey, this, now you know how Nietzsche felt. I said, I have nausea. And go, yes. See, it's like, would you rather have tertiary syphilis or just eat MSG? You go, well, that's not even a choice. I say, well, there you go. And put up with it. But I'm not going to name the name of the time, because I'm not sure. Like, I didn't test it. I don't have a testing kit for it. It's not like testing a friend's pool for chlorine muriatic acid balance. Say, oh, well, look, shake it up. I did that one time. So what are you checking your urine sample? I go, no, I'm checking the pool chemistry. And they said, well, why did you urinate in the little tube? And I go, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'll get that checked out. I haven't given a sample in so long. I was actually asked, I went to the doctor and he said, I need a swatch. And I went, what's that? I give samples. And he goes, no, this time I need it in swatch form. Like if you were selecting carpets or drape fabric. And I go, I don't even know what we're talking about. And he laughed. He goes, forget it. Never mind. Did anybody do that? Tell you a joke and then you don't get it. And they go, never mind. You never really find out what they were getting at. Oh, well, I feel I'm going to lay on my deathbed and that's what's going to go through my head. Also, probably, oh, God, I'm dying, will be the other thing going through my head. And then I'll get a song. I know that's my last thought. And go, what is that damn song? Right? And then I will go to, I've already lost my ability to speak, so all I can do is kind of look up at everybody crying, thinking, damn, this damn song. Is it the Turtles? So I don't know. I don't even know. And that's what I'm blowing, Eddie, will be my last words. That wasn't the song I'm thinking of. Now I'm preoccupied. I do that. I'll spend a whole hour speaking to you, and then at the end of the hour, blurt out something because I was thinking, I was ruminating about. Do you know what that means, to ruminate? Well, here, I'm going to cough up a story from my stomach and then chew it. To chew one's cud is to regurgitate something from your second stomach or rumen and then chew it again. So let's say you ate a lot of grass, or you ate or something that's not going down super easy. And like a tofu pup. And I think I'll just cough it up and chew it later. And I think parsley, I don't know. So it's a celery. Oh, celery strings. That's one. Get that, if you could cough that up and chew it again. I'm sorry to be talking about this at dinner. I'll stop. I don't have a lot of fancy friends. But I am friends with Louis Couture, the Sun King. And he's awfully fancy. I'll be talking about kings because of this shofar. One of the things it does is it announces the king. King's coming. Venu Malkanu. This is not a proper Rosh Hashanah service. This does not. In fact, if you're listening to this, you've made a terrible error and you're not at shul. And I don't know what to tell you. But this is, you know, but hey, not everybody can be there because there's parking problems. So I think you're doing everybody a favor by just staying home. And Grant and Radio Minion, But I'm not going to go through all the things for you. I mainly want to tell you a story, but I have to disguise the story because if I tell you where it's from, you might, in a way, reject the story out of hand because you say, I do not read stories from that source. You know what I'm saying? So I'll tell you right now, it is not Reader's Digest. Bless the hearts. I miss it. You can tell I mention it all the time because I know they're still around, but not the ones that my grandparents had, the little magazines. Nothing else was that size. And I'm looking around, except they make crossword books that size. I buy any book that shape and size. That's the thing. Any little magazine, I'm telling you right now, I'll get it. I go into antique stores, and it's the shape and feel of it. I'm not so worried about content. I want it to feel a certain way and be a certain shape in my hand so I can, you know, is anybody else like that?
No.
People are afraid to say that to me. Oh, yeah, sure. That's why I don't speak for others, because I think they're placating me when they agree. Oh, yeah, we all think that way, Hardy. Really? You know, back out slowly. But I do think that human beings are more alike than not. Look at viruses. They have no problem jumping from, they know that we're all enough alike that they can kill us with their flu or what have you. So I'm going to tell you a story about, and the story on its surface, all right, is like just a story of a father and a son. A famous father, powerful, a well-liked father, an influential father. A father, and we're going to call him Father in the story. Isn't that? Father. Is we're going to call, and we're going to call his son Joke, or you know, Funny Joke, or Good Laugh. I had a good laugh, Funny Joke. I know that's a strange. Where are these people from? Well, you know, your name might mean something. My name is Rosh. Well, it's Rosh Hashanah, so that's a good thing. So your name means head. I know. Okay, censoring. I was going to blow the shofar and then make a joke that I heard in a Reformed temple. But I can't tell you. It was from an older person who may have lost their ability to self-censor. So I'll just... I did see this. I would just interject. I was at a... I can't tell this joke because I don't want to slander the person it's about, because it's a person... Okay, never mind. So are you going to edit that out? No, I'm going to leave it in as an example of what happens when I really try to tell you something that's true. I go, no, I can't do that. I can't do that because that person is, although a minor celebrity, is still, and I don't want to shame them, because we don't, especially on today, don't shame anybody. Don't shame anybody. We use shame so quickly. We're so quick to judge and shame and pillory people in public that it's become, I'm afraid that there's going to be a frenzy or something. When I see people get, you know, people are like dogs, you know, when they get together, they get this false sense of security, and they think that they think they have power, and they get more vicious in groups. I know. So that's why I'm worried. That's why I try to keep, I tell people, hey, you know, basically you should be alone in your apartment. All right. Oh, I don't. I don't say that. And I'm glad to be together with you now. We are virtually together, aren't we? On this, the head, speaking of heads and kings. So did you know, I'm really, as you know, I'm a bit of a mummy enthusiast. And I especially like mummified heads of the famous. You say, are there many? More than you'd think. So, I like the Bourbon family. And what are you talking about, the Bourbon family? What are you talking about, like Pappy Van Winkle? No, he's the head of the Bourbon family, by the way. I'm talking about the original Bourbon family. And I'm specifically thinking about Henry the Fourth. Now, Henry the Fourth was a beloved Bourbon king. That sounded like I was from Louisiana. Bourbon king. But he was a Bourbon king. The Bourbon King. I wish they called me that. Hardy the Bourbon King. Thank you. It's not how much I can drink. It's the quality. So this Bourbon King was well loved. He's the one that converted to Catholicism because he said, hey, what the heck? France is worth a mass. He really did say that. I quote that all the time, inappropriately, and when it doesn't apply. You should too. So even though he's beloved, he was assassinated. Poor fella died and everything. But I don't know when his head came to be cut off, but it was at some point. And then it was stolen during the French Revolution. They ran off with his mummified head and his skin still on it. Now, if you'd search for Henry IV's mummified head, now you can find it on the internet. It's grotesquely distorted. They reconstructed it to see if it was really him, you know, as they are wont to do now. Now, they don't have to literally glue erasers on it and stick clay on it like they used to with fake eyeballs in it. I loved that, though. That was a good trend. Now they can do it electronically with a computer, and that the same way that they bring the Gollum figure to life in Lord of the Rings, they can now put your face on your criminally severed skull remains. Should that happen to you, you won't know. So you almost want to hope that is me, since I won't know. I know it's a little stab at immortality. Say at least, you know, some crusty meaty piece of my anatomy will endure, you know. So this king's head was recovered, and they got it now, and I'm just sitting around. I don't know what they're doing with it. Like Jeremy Bentham, the philosopher, he said, whatever, if my head is the greater good, whatever's the good good to the most people, mummified head. And it sits today, and it's an auto icon. So isn't that amazing? That there's these heads. Now, what is your head even? Can we cut off the head and the body? No. So what is this king? Do we need a king? Do we need a king who is outside ourselves? Or do we need a king within ourselves? A tiny little one who lives in your sinuses. And when he's angry, that's when you get a sinus headache. Because he's jabbing his crown into the soft tissue of your nasal passages. I'm bored, he says, as he taps his scepter on the floor repeatedly. That's when you get a sore throat. This was taught to me by the ancients, who had access to information that we don't have because of the demise of the Reader's Digest. So I'm going to tell you a story now about this father, named Father, and his son, Joke. Or Jokey Joke. Now, Father was one of those people that everybody loved. Everybody in town knew him, and he loved everybody. Anybody coming by his house, he'd say, come on in, I'm the personification of love. I don't mind an open door policy. You've known people like that, haven't you? Just a big figure say, you're like the ghost of Christmas present. Oh, and you have shriveled children clinging to your leg under your coat. Go, yes, I'm that much like him. So, but you know, a jolly character, like Brian Blessed or something like that. Chris O put that thought in my head, and now. See, isn't that funny how people, you don't even know that you transferred something, and now I transfer it. I know, isn't that interesting? It's just like thoughts zipping around the atmosphere, and then landing on you, like guano. So this father is very... magnanimous. Everybody loves him. Everybody comes to him for guidance. They all call him Daddy, Big Daddy. What's up, Big Daddy? I mean, it was your Christian father, but we're calling you Big Daddy, everybody Daddy. He goes, thank you. That's a compliment. I am everybody's father, and he wanted to solve everybody's problems for him. You know, the big personality. Well, he has this son late in life. And he and his wife are like, what a joke. So they call him Joke. Now, the son's kind of passive, right? I mean, you imagine what it's like being in the shadow of that. It's like being Frank Sinatra Jr. So Frank Sinatra Jr. So Joke starts his own, he has an orchestra. And yeah, Sammy Davis comes and plays with him sometime and everything. But it's mainly, it's like, what am I getting my own gigs? Or I'm just getting them, I'm just living out my father's life. I'm living out some imitation of my father's life. And he's sort of a weak guy, joke is. Not fine. We're not talking about Frank Sinatra Jr. now. Now, bless his heart, he's fine, I'm sure. I'm trying to think of somebody else who, in the, you know, what it's like to have a strong parent that kind of overshadows you, right? Like, I'm trying to think of something, I was thinking Genghis Khan, but doesn't it, I think that worked out all right. I don't know. I can't think of anybody offhand. You're probably yelling out names of everybody. I don't know. Like, you know, Nixon's children or whatever. So there comes this day, and I'm not going to tell you exactly what happened, but Joke almost gets killed. Joke almost gets killed because his father forgets that you can love something so much that you can destroy it. Because if you don't let it be itself, and if you substitute it for something else, you think it's part of your narrative. And some parents do that, think their children are part of their story. So they manipulate everything, they do everything for them, and the child gets lost because it doesn't have its own, can't forge its own way. Do you understand? So when the Bourbons would have their children, occasionally you get one like the Grand Dauphin. So the Grand Dauphin was the child of the Sun King. Grand Dauphin was an idiot son. Grand Dauphin would sit around and tap his cane on the floor all day like your sinus king. Oh, dump, dump, dump. You get a big dummy that's got no direction. Because if the father's so powerful that the Grand Dauphin, the son, is just lost. And in that story, he'd actually died before. We don't call him Louis the 13th because he wasn't. He died before his father. How about that? It's going to be like poor King Charles. Clearly, King Charles, I almost called him. Prince Charles, clearly, I got a message to you. Your mama ain't going to die, like, ever. So, and, you know, she looks way better than you. Bless your heart. And your son, look at your son. He's all ready to step in there. So just you go off and be a feminine hygiene product or whatever you want to be. So he said that, not me. Say, Hardy, that's cruel. I'm not. I'm talking, that's what he's wanted. That's, I'm, you know, when your desires make the papers like that, forgive me. And this is a good time of year to ask for forgiveness from your fellow man. So when I make a mistake like that, like ragging on a real person like I just did, I'm wrong. I can't justify it. It was wrong. It was hurtful. So I ask forgiveness. And this is the time to do it because this is about the season where we make things right between us, when we're not afraid to ask forgiveness. And once you ask forgiveness, ask it again. And then if it's not given, ask it a third time. And then if it's not given, then you are allowed to say the F word, followed by it. Because that's not, you tried. You know, make them sure. Make sure they're all sincere. But then your obligation, you can't control other people. I can, because I can hypnotize them. I learned from an episode of Gilligan's Island. I can make Gilligan, at least, dance like a puppet. And now that the actor is deceased, it's much, much easier. Friends, where's this story going? Well, where we left Joke with his father about to take the life out of him in his effort to be the best person possible. And then finally, life intercedes and says, look, you know what, Big Daddy, put your effort somewhere else. You know, this is, you gotta let this child go. And the child could have stopped it too. Sometimes we are overwhelmed by the past, by our predecessors. Sometimes, even though they are long gone, our ancestors still influence us a great deal. And we accept that passively. And we don't realize that it's crushing us, that we're being sacrificed to the past, to the ideals of the past. And we do that in turn. We sacrifice the future for the present as a way of doing our best. But we don't realize that we are crushing a little joke by his very name. We're demeaning him. Now, if he could have a child that could combine those two powerful forces of love and restraint, of aggression and passivity, who can we find that can balance? Who's going to balance that for us? Little Jakey? Little Jake? The wrestler? So Joke has a son named Jake who fights in the mixed martial arts. It's MMA. But he only fights angels. Ooh, I'm on. How do you submit an angel? Ground and pound. Boom. And a blow, but a blow to the thigh of Jake in one of those matches almost debilitated him. Oh, he has got a brother, blah, 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 who's actually a better fighter. Anyway, but we don't talk about that. It's like a Racer X thing. Do you remember that? You remember Speed Racer? It's just like that. A lot of Speed Racer comes from the Bible, we now know. If you look, hey, have you done your homework, friend? Have you read a good book? And I don't mean the good book, but you might read the good book. If you read the Bible, then you, then you have nothing in common with most people. Most people do not trust themselves to actually. Now, I'm not talking about whether you believe in it or not. I'm not promoting anything. I'm just saying, isn't it interesting that it's a book that a lot of people would rather not read because they don't want to misunderstand it, you know? And also because they believe that it's not for them, that they can't interpret. They might do something wrong. If they read it, they might read the wrong thing and get the wrong idea. So they'd rather have someone else tell them. I think, isn't that interesting? I feel that way with instructions. You know, I say, I don't really want to read them. Maybe you read them. I'll try to put this together, and then you tell me whether I'm doing it right or wrong. That's how people treat the Bible, like it's IKEA instructions. But that's all right, because then you get, then you can have a priest class of experts like we do with computers. Anytime that just a few people know information, they're priests. I know you don't think of it that way, but that's what it is. What are you a priest of? Can you be a priest of something? I know I had a neighbor who was like a fertilizer lawn priest. So I know it's time to fertilize. I go, how do you know these things, man? He says, well, because I'm a priest. Priest class. Lawn. Care. I go, man, that's amazing. That's cool. You know, is that something you inherited? No, I'm a bit self-taught. Some of it is because I got a job as a priest, a lawn priest, very early. And you can have that kind of special information. And do you want to share it, or do you want to be the only one who knows it? Depends. You can exploit people and have power if you keep the information to yourself. Are there reasons to share? I don't know. There's some things that shouldn't be shared, like how to play an acoustic guitar or something. Don't teach one, please. That's the problem. I guess it's somebody like Andre Segovia taught the first person, and then it was just like Xerox copies. And it's just this, something happened, and it deteriorated at the end. So you people say, I think I know what I'm doing. Ding, 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 ding. So that everybody who can play a G chord thinks they can play the acoustic guitar. It's almost the only instruments like that. Nobody picks up like a cornet and says, oh, man, I can. This is not a cornet. It's a shofar. It's a very inexpensive one because it's actually a dog horn, not from a ram. What should I play? I want to play something. I'm trying to think of my. I wish I knew some. I mainly listen to saxophone players. That's the problem. I have some. Like I got some Miles in my collection and stuff, but that's about it, man. And who's the guy from the thing? White fella from the 20s. Also, Louis Armstrong. Got lots of Louis Armstrong. I know. I could do here. I'll just do a saxophone. So I did So this is what you'll hear at the, you'll hear, Takiya. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, salt peanuts. Salt peanuts, Godola. Thank you. I wouldn't have, if it wasn't WFMU, I wouldn't have done that. But I just think that it had to be extra long. If there was any other radio say, oh, you never do that. But I think that's just the blessing about what you're listening to. Is it doesn't have to, I have some time. So I'm going to listen to WFMU. And I'm gonna listen carefully. And I'm not going to just I'm not going to have expectations. And then I'm going to explore, then the world will open up for me. Like a book, or a story, or the Palace of Versailles. I was hanging out there, and I tell you, I didn't mind going there when the Sun King was there. I tell you when it was a bummer, was the Louis the 16th. Oh my word. First of all, by that time, the Bourbons looked totally different to me. They used to be kind of handsome-looking people. But what happened is they married... there was some bad marriage. I liked the way that I thought that the Henrys were handsome. And then this gal from Austria, Anne, something about her, she just looked kind of had that dull expression. And then that got passed down. That's so funny. I have some of that. You look at me, people go, man, you look like dull, like a dullard. I don't know how to take it exactly, but I've interpreted over the years as being, I'm a simple person. I definitely don't look smart. I don't know what that's about. Some people, though, they look shy. Go, they're not always smart, but some people just look out and you go, I bet that person's smart. No, you can't tell that. You really can't. I'd go by the university and play like hobo or professor. You can't tell some of them. It's deceiving. Looks are deceiving. Unless people really, really, really want you to believe something because of their look. A lot of people really want you to know something about them because of their look. There's a guy who, around town, who dresses like a samurai. And because he wants you to know he's a samurai. The same goes with a lot of people at court. They go, hey, look at me. I'm mainstream and sophisticated and classy. And I have, and my mustache is tattooed on. So, but that happens at court a lot. You see people wearing stuff they don't normally wear because they want to give a certain impression. They want you to think they're someone they're not. And that's because of our prejudices. Because that's if we looked at somebody in their natural state, we'd think we'd know everything about them. So we need them somehow neutralized like that. So go, oh, well, he's got, this always happens. Watch this. And especially the worse your crime, the more likely you are to wear a sweater vest. A sweater vest, a V-neck sweater vest, is the most, this is for men normally, most emasculating thing that cynical people can think of to put on somebody. Say, you know what, rather than your normal biker vest, let's go with a sweater vest, maybe peach. And then the jury will think, oh, that how could that kind man who looks like Benny on L.A. Law or something, how's he going to have hurt anybody? And they make that assumption. But I tell you, you can't tell from appearances. People see me and they say, hey, you're supposed to be here? I get that a lot. No, people are too embarrassed to say anything. They look at me like, hey, are you supposed to be here? But nobody can get up the nerve to say anything. That's how I go. I go all sorts of places that I don't think I'm supposed to be. If I go, it's so funny because I'll do this. If I go to a Jewish service, like say the High Holy Days, or so, I'll just sit on the bima. And nobody will say anything. Say, well, if he certainly would not do that if he wasn't supposed to be there. And then nobody says anything. Sometimes the rabbi will look at you like, do we know each other? And I'll say, no. And that, and there's that one time of the year where that would make sense to the rabbi. It's like, of course not. You know, my family had been here since the teens. I only come, you know, once a year, but then I get to sit here because my family gave money for the chair. And then I believe it was one of my aunts who did the needlepoint. I love when we come together as a family. I love it when we have a feast. I love it when we eat some honey. I love it when we come together as a family. And we're sharing life's joys and pains. It's easier to share life's pains. Hey, listen, let me tell you something. It's always better to share your pain with a group of people. Why? Because when you pick one person, you burden them. So let's say you're having a hard time. So I just keep calling my friend Joe. Well, man, give Joe a break and get together a party of people and have them console you and then get consoled and be fine and move on. That's what I'm saying. And stop, instead of burdening somebody all the time like that, there's a, we can help each other together. And when you're part of something, you feel less inclined to make it about you. Don't you? Oh, yes. Go to a group sing or something. You will lose yourself in a wonderful way. And you'll say, not only have I lost myself, I feel like I've gained a bigger me. And it's true. It's true. You know, go ahead and let yourself be open to that. And you will experience something great. How do I find that? Well, one thing, walk into a breakfast place like a pancake waffle place nude. No, don't do this. Don't do anything I say. I don't know how you solve it. I'm just going to say, I say what I think is a good solution. And then you come up with it. Like, for instance, this is how I feel like I could take credit for everything. Because I'll say something like, we need a spaceship that you can go to the moon and back in like a day. But you go ahead and make it. But then I will take credit for coming up with the idea. No, that's silly. A lot of things work that way, though, don't they? Oh, I know. I want to be a person who understands you. I want to be a person who delivers a story from the grave. That means without guile, without self-consciousness, being completely honest. And the most honest thing I can do for you is to contradict myself and to not press the pause button. I think that's the most, if you hear me thinking, you will get more from it than if I try to polish something up and show it to you. When we sell a house, we're always advised to clean it up, to paint the walls a color that appeals to the most people. We are told to perhaps put some smell in the air, like cinnamon or popcorn, so people will associate your house with good feelings. We tart it up. But let me tell you something. What does that say? That says that only when something is cleaned up, only if you look at it the way it not normally is, will you accept it. And then how can you ever get true acceptance like that if you fell for something when its appearance was different? If you fell in love with a person that was wearing a mask, wouldn't you just be in love with the mask? And so I ask you, let people see more and they will respond to it. Let people see that you're confused, that you're contradicting yourself, that you're constantly changing, that you're not the person you were at 10 years old or 20 years old or 30 years old or 40 years old or 50 years old or 60 years old or 70 years old or 80 years old or 90 years old or 100 years old, 110 years old or 120 years old or 130 years old. And if I covered everybody, I didn't want to leave anybody out because a 100-year-old person said, so I was in a restaurant one time and I was talking about blah, 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 my old neighbor, blah, 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 she's really old. And a person behind me turned around and scolded me for calling someone old. And I said, you know, and this person was probably 10 years older than me or something like that. And I said, excuse me, I see where you're coming from, but I'm not calling you old. I'm calling a person who's over 100 old. Now, that's about as old as a person gets. Now, granted, perhaps she is not old in her heart or something poetic like that, but that is F-word old for a human being. I'm sorry, I wasn't being pejorative necessarily, as being descriptive as opposed to a young person. I'm sure that nobody who's, sometimes people who are 25 don't want to be called a young person. Hey, I'm not young. But they're, you know, it depends. It's relative. So will you please turn around, sir? I don't know. You know, I don't even know if that really happened to me. I'm thinking back. I think I've just, I might have imagined it. They might not have turned around or, no, I think they did. Ooh, that memory is almost gone. I know it happened in a Jerry's restaurant. I don't think they have those anymore in Tallahassee, Florida. And I know that I used to go to this same restaurant all the time. You know, it's just one of those with booths. I think it's nothing but booths. No tables. Booths only. You know that kind of place? Like a, maybe like a diner. And there was this couple that would sit behind me all the time. They were always either in front of me in the next booth. And this is back when people smoked in restaurants. And this couple, they would smoke together. And they enjoyed smoking together so much. And they both had white hair, the same Mo Howard haircut. I guess they're husband and wife, but they had the same white bowl cut haircut. And they both had these things that they wore around their neck that were disposable lighter carriers. You put your disposable lighter in it and you'd wear it around your neck, and they would sit and they'd chain smoke and they'd smoke while they eat, and they just loved smoking so much. They're the smoky couple with the lighters around their neck that looked like some kind of amulet or something. So they both looked like some kind of high priests. They looked like there's some kind of smoky cult. It was wonderful. Then I came to appreciate them. Just for one, they're loved. They were happy. They were loving each other. I'm sure they are long dead, and I can predict what led to their demise. But boy, that memory is strong in me, and I think it's because I was looking for happy people. I was looking for people who were content in spite of the evidence. Right? You look at them, you feel condescending thoughts. And then their attitudes seem to defy your expectations. And you're forced to confront that and think, you know, maybe there is joy where I have not seen it. Maybe it's hiding. Maybe it's hiding in others, and I should give people the passcode and let them know that I know what they're going through and they know what I'm going through. And I think that passcode is forgive me. Forgive me. And I ask you, all my regular listeners, all the people who have just tuned in, if I have said anything hurtful, and I mean this sincerely, I'm not just saying this to go through a thing. It's genuinely difficult because I would like to think that I am so enlightened and I am so knowledgeable that I never make mistakes or that I never get laughs at anybody's expense. That's a lie. I do. I have said things that I know on thinking back are hurtful, are bitter, are nasty, and they have to affect somebody. I know I have said things that are disturbing, whether they're true or not. And so I ask you to forgive me. I say this, and by evidence of my sincerity, I say I will try to not do it again. But listen, I make mistakes all the time. So I just want you to know that I have no agenda. So if I've said something to hurt you, it's not, it is a mistake. And that, believe me, I know it the minute it comes out of my mouth. So I take this one time a year to ask everybody to say, I am sorry.
Well, don't you? It's meaningless unless you apologize for something specific.
Oh, man, I guess that's right.
Yeah, see?
But what? I don't even know sometimes what I've said that might be hurtful.
Well, have you said anything in your...
Could you give me a minute just to talk to my friend here?
Yeah, sorry. So have you said anything that you think is particularly hurtful to him?
Well, the Prince Charles thing.
Yeah. Well, apologize to Prince Charles.
Prince Charles, I'm sorry. Just because you're a public figure or something doesn't mean that you belong to me. Doesn't mean that your feelings are disposable. Doesn't mean that just because I think you're privileged that you're some kind of target. You know, I'm not that kind of. If I'm going to believe that everybody is equal, then I'm not going to pick people out who have more money or more power than I, that somehow I'm threatened by, and make it okay to hurt them. Either it's okay or it's not. And so I'm going to say, I'm going to err on the side of caution and say it's not okay to attack people unless they attack you, and then I'm going to bring the Wing Chun. I think I'm going to have to draw the line at physical. If you do stuff like that, then all bets are off. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just talking about, like, you know, this is situational. You say, what about war? Man, just, I'm talking about getting along at the bakery, right? That's my domain. This is not macro. Hardy White talks about micro. This is just between you and your neighbor. And I don't think that there's going to be any full-scale war or any, you know, real stuff like that. That's for somebody else to talk about. Really, honest to goodness. I am micro. So we're dealing with the small scale of neighborhoods and individual hearts and something like that. I really can't tell you what to do as a country or anything like that. That is somebody else's vermendu. As it were. I love to assume that you don't really listen, that you're listening so little to what I'm saying that I can make up words. But I know that's not true. Some of you are actually paying attention. And if I thought this, if I really internalized it, I would panic. And so I try to just pretend that I'm alone and that there's no one left on earth and that I broke my glasses like Burgess Meredith in Twilight Zone. Oh, that would be fine with me, and I'll tell you why, because all the books are in my head. I can travel anywhere I want. How do I know that? Because I learned it on Reading Rainbow. LeVar Burton told me I could, and then LeVar Burton got in a spaceship, and he appeared to travel around the world. He traveled around the universe, and he came on back, but he was still blind, like Isaac the blind. All that story was about Abraham and Isaac. Woo! This is the part of the show where I do freeform jazz sermonizing. I'm getting free. Here we go. I'm doing Pastor Troy. That was Pastor Troy. That's my pastor. So I want to thank you so much for this year. For you being you, for you being a single individual, from everything being from your perspective. I understand that. You are, from your eyes, the world. So I hope your world is full of peace. I hope your universe is full of peace. I wish you so much sweetness and joy in your life, and I know there will be difficulties, but I'll tell you what, recruit people to do it with you. It's better as a team. Oh, it's better as a family. It's better as a team. Get someone to share with you. Share life's joys. Share life's pain. Share everything. Don't be afraid. Share it all. Give it all away. Be huge. Be huge like Abraham, but then don't smother. Pull it back like Isaac, and then bend it like Beckham, and then, I don't know, blow like Hardy. That's my recommendation. You have been listening to Miracle Nutrition. And what is it on? It's on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, WFMU.org, and 91.9 in blessed Rockland County. Join me again next week for more of the different.
Listen to me for a while I tell you about a little vision I had of heaven. And in my vision, I saw some old familiar faces that I once had seen before. And among them, I saw somebody who used to tug me in my bed every night. I saw somebody who used to kiss me and make my pains go away. Help me, Jesus. I saw somebody that when Father would turn his back on you, she would say, Lord, please. I saw a mother resting in the arms of the Lord. I saw a mother in the arms of the Lord. She was telling him this old world where she once trod. She told him how she traveled to and fro, and she had many, 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 many pains and woe. I sat on there until I began to cry. I told mother I want to meet her by and by. I want to be where mother was. Father, Lord.
children out there. What a man, what a man, what a man. Good God Almighty, just try this man. All right, all right. Reverend Isaiah, you take them. They're yours now.
Program with the Reverend Isaiah, God's man of faith. God is blessing people through this ministry. People all over are being blessed, my friends, with new homes, new cars, jobs. Loved ones are treating them right. God is even opening jail doors. That's right. God is even stopping people from drinking. And many, many, yes, I said many people were sick, but now they have good health. And I want you to know, my friends, what God does for one, he'll do for another. So why don't you start right now and trust the Reverend Isaiah? Let God bless you through this great prophet. Yes, friends, through the teachings and praying of the Reverend Isaiah. You can change your life for the better. God put a family in a new home. Yes, and God blessed a young lady with a good job and a brand new car. God also blessed the Reverend Floyd in getting his church back, and his wife came back home. And God did it all through this great prophet, the Reverend Isaiah. Why be sick when you can be well? Why be sad when you can be happy? Why be lonely when you can have someone to love? Remember, the Reverend Isaiah wants you to have one of his healing and blessing prayer cloths and a blessing from his big gold Bible. The Reverend Isaiah believes that it is time for you to be blessed. So get in touch with this great prophet of God, the Reverend Isaiah, God's man of faith, Isaiah.
My friends, you gotta try it. The Vim and Vigor and Fat Fighter together will just like it just melt the weight off and help you with the high blood pressure, cholesterol, the backache, and the pains all at the same time, my friend. And you know, you men out there, you might have that problem where you're a little slack. You can't perform like you used to or like you like to in the bedroom. No, you can't perform.